Okay. We are in Genesis chapter 18 today. We started the chapter last week, and we looked at about the first 9 verses or so last week. So let's do this. Let's read the passage we looked at last week and the verses that I hope to cover today, and then we'll go back and do our review and go from there. So it says, "Now the Lord appeared to him," that is to Abraham, "by the oaks of Mamre, while he was still at the tent door in the heat of the day," or while he was, sitting at the tent door in the heat of the day. "When he lifted up his eyes and looked, behold, 3 men were standing opposite him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the earth and said, 'My Lord, if now I have found favor in your sight, please do not pass your servant by. Please let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. And I will bring a piece of bread that you may refresh yourselves. After that, you may go on since you have visited your servant.' And they said, 'So do as you have said.' So Abraham hurried into the tent, into Sarah, and said, 'Quickly, prepare 3 measures of fine flour, knead it, and make bread cakes.' Abraham also ran to the herd and took a tender, choice calf and gave it to the servant, and he hurried to prepare it. He took curds and milk and the calf which he had prepared and placed it before them, and he was standing by them under the tree as they ate. Then they said to him, 'Where is Sarah, your wife?' And he said, 'There in the tent.' He said, 'I will surely return to you at this time next year. And behold, Sarah, your wife, will have a son.' And Sarah was listening at the tent door, which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. Sarah was past childbearing. Sarah laughed to herself, saying, 'After I have become old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also?' And the Lord said to Abraham, 'Why did Sarah laugh, saying, "Shall I indeed bear a child when I am so old? Is anything too difficult for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you at this time next year, and Sarah will have a son.' Sarah denied it, however, saying, 'I did not laugh,' for she was afraid. And he said, 'No, but you did laugh.'" Okay? Well, let's go on. Because I forgot how far we're going to try and get today. Verse 16. "Then the men rose up from there and looked down toward Sodom, and Abraham was walking with them to send them off. The Lord said, 'Shall I hide from Abraham what I am about to do? Since Abraham will surely become great, a great and mighty nation, and in him all the nations of the earth will be blessed. For I have chosen him so that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, so that the Lord may bring upon Abraham what he has spoken about him.' And the Lord said, 'The outcry of Sodom and Gomorrah is indeed great, and their sin is exceedingly grave. I will go down now and see if they have done entirely according to its outcry, which has come to me. And if not, I will know.'" Okay? So last week we looked at about the first 9 verses or so of the passage. So what do you remember from last week? And I know you're all quiet this morning. This cloudy, wet weather has been getting to you, but you got to pipe up here.
Go. How they got, they walked in the camp, just kind of appeared because we thought it would have been towards the center.
Okay.
So they just kind of appeared.
It's not real clear, but how they got to where they are. But he just says they appeared to him, and Abraham obviously has a fairly large entourage, and he has herds of cattle around him and guys out there taking care of him. So the suggestion is, of course, that they just kind of appeared there opposite him, wherever that was. Yeah. What else?
Well,
we talked about him when perhaps he recognized that it was the Lord. I went and looked up those two words he mentioned in verse 3 and in verse 12.
Uh-huh.
The Hebrew is the same word, so maybe there's some other things in there that I didn't get a chance to read. So I didn't think that it was real clear in verse 3 that he knew it was God, mm-hmm. the Lord, first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If that's the case, then his hospitality is an incredible challenge to be that way with people, with
yeah.
strangers. If
yeah.
he knew it was the Lord, you know, that would be easy. If I thought
yeah.
the Lord was coming to visit my house, hospitality would be rather easy.
Yeah.
So the one presents a great challenge for hospitality.
Yeah. Well, and the interesting thing is that in the New Testament, when we're enjoined in the New Testament to be hospitable, the Lord tells us to do so because in all possibility we may be entertaining angels without knowing about it. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. What else? Uh-huh.
Shechem was a place where they had renounced the past. And then Negev or Hebron was where he had a deeper relationship. And then the oath of Mamre was where he did his daily.
Mm-hmm.
So that he
mm-hmm.
come back, and that's where he daily lived his life faithfully.
Yeah. And that's where we spend most of our time too, isn't it? Just faithfully day after day, like he says in the Psalms, dwelling in the land and cultivating faithfulness. And that's what Abraham was doing all those many years. And it's finally after 24 years of that he has this particular encounter with the Lord. What else?
He ran, which was not in his culture.
Okay.
He was rather excited about the
government. Yeah, he's pretty intense about this. Yeah, he's pretty intense about it. What else?
Well, another thing that was kind of curious is that they did not address Sarah directly. And I was wondering if it's because she wasn't standing around, perhaps, or I forget what you suggested. I'm sure you'll tell me. Another possibility is because of their relationship, it was more appropriate to address Abraham.
Yeah, it could. I don't really know. I think I made that clear last week. I don't know why he addresses Sarah so obliquely through Abraham. But part of it may have been the cultural aspect that strangers didn't address someone's wife like that, which would be, of course, a very Middle Eastern type of thing, you know. So it may have been culture. It may have been that. It may have been that the Lord knew that at that point Sarah didn't have the faith to hear it. So the Lord spoke it to faith rather than to...
She was standing behind the door. God knew she was standing behind the door listening.
Yeah.
And knew that she was skeptical. Yeah. Had skeptical.
Yeah.
At first I was thinking whenever she said to her reaction, that she laughed herself after being old, you know, had a pleasure having a child. First, I was thinking she was kind of being, so that's how he's going to do it. But then, whenever he said he's anything too hard, then it shows that, you know, he knew her heart.
Yeah.
She was being sarcastic.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's pretty clear, and we'll go into that more today, that I think it's pretty clear that whereas with Abraham's laughter in the last chapter, it seems that Abraham's laughter was kind of a laughter of joy and pleasure in the anticipation. But you couldn't even be dogmatic about that. I think it's pretty clear in this passage that the Lord is reprimanding Sarah for her unbelief, and so clearly her laughter is a laughter of doubt and skepticism, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. So, what was Abraham's request when he ran out to those three guys? Yeah, yeah. Whatever else you got on your agenda, guys, I need a visit. And we talked some about that too, how in our own lives, oftentimes we think that the Lord is, I don't know, maybe you don't, but I do. Sometimes I think the Lord's got so much on his plate and he's so busy that my little problems or or my need for a visit from him isn't all that important. But Abraham is bold enough to say, Lord, whatever you've got going on, I need you, and I need a visit from you. And of course, the Lord grants him that request because of his great love and grace, etc.
Thank you, Rich. How long has it been since Lord Abraham had spoken?
Just a short period of time, because chapter 7, you remember in chapter 17, in that encounter that they had in chapter 17, that the Lord told Abraham that in about a year I'm going to return and you'll have a son through Sarah. Okay. And he says the same thing here in chapter 18. So the encounter in chapter 17, which is seems quite distinct from the encounter in chapter 18, nevertheless, apparently happened in fairly close proximity to one another. But both of those encounters, the encounter before those seems to have been 13 years earlier, the situation with Ishmael, when he comes and he talks to him about Ishmael and he enters into the covenant and all sort of that whole thing that he talked about in chapter 16. So there was a period of about a 13-year period of gap between his last encounter, and then he has these two encounters apparently in fairly close proximity to one another. So does that answer your question? Okay. Well, let's pick up the story. When we left off last week, we just had these men had asked Abraham where his wife was, and he said she's there in the tent. And we talked about why did they ask the question, and we suggested that it seems like the real reason they're asking Abraham the question is not because they need to know. It's obvious they do know. The Lord knows where she is and what she's thinking, and you know, inside her mind. So He knows all that. So the clear intent of the question is to get Sarah's attention. So even though the Lord is speaking to Abraham directly, it's clear that He wants Sarah listening. He wants Sarah to be hearing this. So this is really God's first promise to Sarah herself. And you'll notice there's a fine distinction here, but in chapter 17, when the Lord finally tells Abraham that he is going to have a child through Sarah, he says, I am going to give you a son through Sarah. But now when he talks to Abraham about Sarah, with Sarah overhearing the conversation, he says, I am going to give Sarah a son. Okay, so it may seem like a fine distinction, but I think the point here is that the Lord is trying to communicate directly to Sarah that she's really part of this whole covenant thing. She's really part of this promise. And this son that she's going to have is not just going to be Abraham's son. It's going to be her son. Okay. So this is where we are at this point in the story. And the Lord makes this promise then obliquely to Sarah through Abraham. And He says, about this time next year, I'm going to return to you and Sarah will have a son. Okay. And then it tells us that Sarah is standing in the door of the tent, which is behind the Lord, so He's not visually seeing her. And she thinks, of course, that He can't see her, and so He's really not paying attention to her, she thinks. And so then we get the picture of her response to the things that the Lord has said, to the promise that He has just made to her obliquely. But what's interesting, one of the things that's interesting in this, the way the passage unfolds here, is that He doesn't go directly to Sarah's response. Right after the promise is articulated there in verse 11, in verse 10, then in verse 11, the Holy Spirit records for us once again the reality of Sarah's world. Okay, so He says there in verse 11, He says, now Abraham and Sarah were old, they were advanced in age, and Sarah was past childbearing. And so here's Sarah, she's standing in the door of the tent. She's listening to all this because they're talking about her now. And so she's eavesdropping, she's overhearing all these things that are being said. And she hears this remarkable promise from God that she is about to have a son. And what happens here is something that happened with Abraham earlier, and we talked about this many weeks ago as we were starting our study in Abraham, that for 75 years, Abraham had a certain reality in his life. And it was the reality. It's the way things really were. But then came the promise of God. And when the promise of God came to Abraham, it changed his reality. Okay. So it was going to be another 25 years before he would actually begin to see the actual visual evidence of that promise being fulfilled. But Abraham's reality was transformed, which is what enabled him, empowered him to get up from Haran and move down to Canaan, because he had a different reality. His reality was changed by the promise of God. And I think what the Holy Spirit is doing through the narration here is he's trying to remind us of what Sarah's reality is. Okay, before he tells us what Sarah's response is, he wants us to remember Sarah's reality. And this is Sarah's reality. She is now, 79 years old. Okay, she's 79 years old. She's getting up there in years. She's quite aged, quite old. She has never had children. Not only has she never had children, but she is now past, way, way past menopause. She cannot bear children. It's an impossibility, okay? This is Sarah's reality. So before we get too critical of Sarah, when we see her response, we have to remember how real this is for her. This is all she has known her whole life. All she has known her whole life is barrenness. That's all she's known. And now, not only is she barren, but she's past even the possibility of having children. This is her reality. So whenever the people around her, the women in her house, would give birth to children, okay, and she would be around and she would watch them as they gave birth, and then as they nurtured these new babies and brought them up, and she saw all the pleasure and all the joy and all the wonder that women experienced as they gave birth to these children and then nurtured these babies and then raised them to adulthood, and she saw all that pleasure that others had. And now she has come to the realization that this will never happen in her life. This is her reality. Now, she's got many blessings in her life. She's married to a great guy, you know. As we see, he's a typical guy, but he's still a great guy. And they're fairly well off, so she's fairly comfortable, even though she is living in a tent. You know, I don't think my wife would let me keep her in a tent for 80 years. But, you know, she's pretty well off. So she's got a lot of blessings in her life. But the one pleasure that she wanted more than anything else in life has been denied to her, and this is her reality. And she cannot at this point conceptualize any other reality than the reality that she knows. Can you relate to that? Yeah, Rick. Say that again. Yeah. Colossians. Yeah. Well, yeah, and the point I'm wanting to make is that this really is her reality. It's the reality of many women until the promise of God comes. And when the promise of God came in Abraham's life, it changed his reality from what it was to what it was going to be. And the promise of God now comes to Sarah for the very first time. The promise comes to Sarah directly, and her reality is altered. But the question then is, How is Sarah going to respond to this promise of God? And we see her response that she's standing there in the tent door, and she's behind the Lord, so she thinks he doesn't see, and she thinks he doesn't know. And to make sure that he doesn't hear, she laughs only, it says, to herself. So this is all inside. It's inside her that she laughs. And she says in verse 12, it says, Sarah laughed to herself, saying, after I have become old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also? And so Sarah is at this moment, because she's still focused on what she, as Rick said, her perception of her reality, or what her reality has been up to this point in her life, she's so focused on that. That's so ingrained into her thinking. And now for the first time, it really hits her that what God is saying is that she is going to have a son at this time next year. And the fortress of her previous reality, or her perception of her reality, the fortress of that just stands against this promise of God that she's going to have a child. And she just cannot imagine that she could ever have this pleasure that she has watched others, so many other women have. And she has lived so long. Her reality is so ingrained in her, and it is so strong, and it is so overpowering, that when she hears the promise of God, she merely laughs at it. And she goes, is it possible that after I have become old, that I could have this pleasure? And it's just inconceivable to Sarah that she could experience that exquisite pleasure that a woman has when she holds her infant child, or she nurses her infant son, or she raises her child up to adulthood. All the pleasure that a woman experiences in that, and all that she's seen, and she cannot, she's never known it, she's never experienced it. She's come to the point where she's concluded it will never be, and it will never happen. And even though God promises it, it cannot happen. And so we see, once again, as we saw in chapter 16, we see once again Sarah's doubt, Sarah's lack of faith. She just doesn't believe the promise of God. Her reality is too strong. And she goes, this just cannot be. And she actually, literally, in her heart, laughs at the promise of God. Now, it's easy for us to be critical of Sarah because we've seen the rest of the story. But in our own lives, how oftentimes is that the case? Our reality, or our perception of our reality, is so strong that when God comes to us with His promises and His assurances, it just seems like, well, maybe that's for other people. But that can't be true in my life. My reality is too powerful. It's too strong. Now, there's something interesting that's going on here, though. Turn over to 1 Peter. Keep your finger there in Genesis, but turn over to 1 Peter. And in chapter 3, Peter is giving instruction. He's beginning to give some instructions to the women and the men and other people in the church there, in the fellowship of believers. And regarding the women, beginning in verse 3, he says, your adornment must not be merely external, braiding the hair and the wearing of gold jewelry and putting on dresses, but let it be in the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. For in this way, in former times, the holy women also, who, what? Hoped in God, used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands. Just as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you have become her children, if you do what is right, without being frightened by any fear. Okay, now keep that verse in mind for a moment. If I wanted to find perhaps the most powerful example of doubt and of unbelief in the life of Sarah, where would I go? Well, I would go to Genesis chapter 12 or Genesis chapter 18, verse 12. I think her unbelief there is even more pronounced than it is in chapter 16 when she makes the proposal regarding Hagar. And the reason for that is because now she's actually hearing the audible promise of God from the lips of God Himself. Okay? So she's actually hearing from God very specifically what His intention and what His purpose and what His promise is for her life. And she, in the face of direct word from God, laughs. Okay? So if I wanted to point out to you kind of the pinnacle of Sarah's doubt and of Sarah's unbelief, I would take you to Genesis chapter 18, verse 12. So we come now, to the New Testament, and Peter wants to give to women an example of a woman, a godly woman, a holy woman who hoped in God without fear. In other words, a holy woman of faith. And he wants to cite an example for them that they can follow, and he picks a verse. What verse does he pick? Genesis chapter 18, verse 12. This is the only place in the story of Sarah that it's recorded that she called Abraham Lord. And Peter cites Genesis chapter 18, verse 12, as his evidence that Sarah was one of these holy women of faith who was not frightened by any fear, but hoped in the Lord. And so I go, disconnect. What's going on? You had a point there you wanted to make?
Well, I don't know that it was very clear that even though God had told Abraham that he would follow his promise, I'm sure that Abraham and Sarah had some casual conversation about it, but it's not very clear in that there was much of a discussion. And if there was, Abraham didn't convince her very well.
You're talking about this incident here?
Yeah.
Well, but there's no discussion here. In other words, she's overhearing.
Well, I understand.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that from the previous encounter,
yes,
the Lord, where he said that a year from now,
oh, yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying.
He's going to give you a son.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if Abraham even talked with his wife about you, because it doesn't appear to me that there was much of a discussion.
Well, that's a good question. I like giving the benefit of the doubt, but sometimes those guys are a little slow on the uptake, so I don't know. You got a good question there. Okay. But go. What was that?
Trying to keep
things from mama. There we go, Hal. We're back on that theme again. Yeah. But going back now to this paradox that we have. We have here in one verse an example in the life of Sarah of both faith and doubt. Both faith and unbelief. And we encounter here the ambiguity of your Christian experience, don't we? Because this is very clearly a moment of doubt in the life of Sarah. And yet in this very same verse, at the very moment when she's expressing her doubt about a specific promise of God, she is also revealing in the way she refers to Abraham in her heart. This isn't what she says out loud. Okay? This is not something that's where she's just putting on a show. This is in her heart how she thinks of Abraham. She thinks of Abraham as her Lord. In other words, this becomes clear in Peter, she understands that God is working in and through her life through this man who is her husband. She understands that. She accepts that. She embraces that. And she's not frightened by fear. And she is full of confidence of God at work in her life. That's the point of 1 Peter chapter 3. She is a holy woman, not frightened by fear, hoping in God. Okay. So this paradox, this ambiguity that we discover in our Christian experience is that, yes, it is possible to be a man or woman whose life is characterized by faith and hope in God, and yet at the same time to have moments of failure and doubt and unbelief. Now, I don't know about you, but that's kind of encouraging to me. Because there are those who would want us to believe that when we have moments of failure in our life or moments of doubt, it just erases all the good. It just erases a lifetime of faith. But it doesn't do that. Sarah is a godly woman who hopes in God. She's a holy woman who hopes in God. And generally speaking, in her life, she's not frightened by any fear. But confronted with one overwhelming promise of God, promising her a pleasure that goes against everything in her reality, it's just more than she can bring herself to believe at this point. And she laughs. And I'm encouraged by that because what I understand now when I read what the Holy Spirit says about her in 1 Peter chapter 3 is that even though her unbelief here in 18:12 is significant and calls for a direct rebuke from the Lord, even though that is true, and even though if she had continued in that unbelief, it would have prevented the promise of God being fulfilled in her life, as we'll see here in a minute. So it's her unbelief is a very serious and offensive thing to this holy God who is seated before her eating his food. It's a very serious thing. And yet, even in that, God in his mercy and his grace and in his love does not obliterate or forget a whole lifetime of faith, a whole lifetime of walking with this guy Abraham and trusting God to work through Abraham in her life. God sees that, and he acknowledges that, and he recognizes that, and he commends her for that, and he sets her before us as an example in that respect. Okay?
Rick, another encouraging thing along that line is the teaching that you mentioned about some things you have doubt might fall out. Well, the other part of that is those who might teach that if you have real faith, you won't have any doubt.
Yeah.
So we know that that's not true.
We
live with this on a daily basis.
Yeah.
We struggle with it. We can see here that God still fulfills his part because he knows we're not going to be able to hold it together with our faith perfectly.
Yeah. Good point. Great point. Yeah. Well, so she laughs, and then the Lord, once again addressing Sarah obliquely, says to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh? Saying, am I going to have a bear child when I'm so old? And then the Lord says, is there anything too wonderful for the Lord? Now, your translation may say, too difficult there. But the word difficult there actually means wonderful. Okay. And that's really what's going on here. Sarah's had a lot of blessings in her life. But there's one thing that is just would be so wonderful. Yesterday, excuse me for getting personal here, but yesterday my son posted on his Facebook, he posted this awesome picture of my brand new grandbaby sound asleep lying across the lap of her mother. You know, it's just an adorable picture. Of course it is because it's my granddaughter, right? But it's just, and really all you see of Amanda is you just see her knees and her legs there and a little bit of her waist, you know, because the picture is the baby. But as I was out there yesterday, I was out at the lake and I was meditating on this and thinking about this idea of Sarah talking about this as a pleasure. I was thinking not so much about the baby in the picture as I was thinking about the mother in the picture. And just the exquisite pleasure that she was having at that moment that that picture was taken, you know. And this is something that is just so wonderful in the mind of Sarah that she just can't imagine that it would be possible that she could have something so wonderful in her life. What are the wonderful things in your life that are impossible? What are the things in your life that are just, it's so wonderful, it just seems like maybe God couldn't do it? He says, is there anything too wonderful for the Lord? Is there anything so exquisitely wonderful that God can't do it? That's his question to Abraham, and his question to Sarah, and his question to me, and his question to you. Is there anything so wonderful in your life that I can't do it? And then he restates the promise. He says, indeed, a year from now, I am going to come. At the appointed time, I'll be here a year from now, and Sarah will have a son. And he's emphatic about it. Well, one of the wonderful things in this story that we've already seen is that Sarah really, even at this moment of doubt in her life, is still a woman of faith. That's one wonderful thing. But here's the other wonderful thing. It's hidden in here. You didn't see it. It's that Sarah is going to move from doubt to faith. How do I know that? Because in Hebrews chapter 11 it says that Sarah received the ability or the power to conceive by faith. Because it says she considered him faithful who had promised. Hebrews chapter 11 verse 11. And so what we discover about Sarah is she's a woman who begins with doubt, but she moves to faith. And I would suggest she moves fairly rapidly because she's going to have a baby in a year, and she can't have a baby without conceiving, and she can't conceive without faith. So sometime between when this promise is made and Sarah laughs, and within less than 3 months or less than this, she moves to a heart of faith. I don't know how soon. It doesn't seem like right away because she certainly didn't immediately change with the first rebuke from the Lord, because then she denies having said, because she's afraid. Okay, so we see that at the end. So it seems like it wasn't like right away she goes, oh, I'm sorry. Okay, yeah, I believe. It wasn't right away, but at some point between this encounter with God and her point of conception, she moved from doubt to faith. And I was thinking there are three kinds of people, maybe more than that. There are three kinds of people in the world. There are those who, when they hear the promise of God, they just believe it, they grab it, and they always believe it, and they keep believing it all the way to the end. Okay? There's a few of those. And then there are those who hear the promise of God, and they believe it. But this promise of God in their life is like their faith is more like a castle in the sand in the beach. You know, it's very beautiful to look at. But when the waves of reality begin to come in, eventually they just erode it and they sweep it away. There are those who begin by faith, but just over a period of weeks or months or even years, as in the case of Abraham, over a case of years, as they wait for the promise of God to be fulfilled in their life, that relentless wearing down of the waves of their reality just eat away and erode their faith, and it's eventually swept out to sea. But then there are those who, like Sarah, when they first hear the promise of God, consider it too wonderful for him to do. They start with doubt. But eventually, over a period of time, they come to faith. Now, I don't know. It's kind of fun to reflect on. I don't know how Sarah moved from doubt to faith. You know, I don't know if after her confrontation with God, she just, over the next several days, got alone in the solitude of her tent or out there somewhere in the desert and just, you know, under one of the trees of Mamre or something, and she just went and she sat and she contemplated and she thought, okay, now God promised and God is faithful. And I'm just going to consider him faithful who has promised. He's going to do this. I don't know how she did it. Or maybe finally Abraham got on the ball. Maybe Abraham pulled his wife aside after they left and said, okay, now, Sarah, let's talk about this. This is God we're talking about. And there's nothing so wonderful that he can't do it. Maybe it was Abraham that nurtured her along, but somehow she moved from doubt to faith. And God knew she would move from doubt to faith. How do I know God knew she would move from doubt to faith? Because God made the promise and he said it is going to happen. And it couldn't happen unless she believed. Because Hebrews 11 says she received the power to conceive by faith. So God knew she was going to be conformed to his image. He understood that. So I don't know how she moved. But she did move, and that's what's important. And as I was thinking about this phenomena, this experience in the life of Sarah, I was reminded of that encounter that Jesus had during Holy Week, during the Passion Week, there in Jerusalem. And there was one point where he's interacting with the Pharisees and the leaders. And he uses an example for them. He says, say a man has two sons. And he says to his sons, go out in my field and work. And the first son says, I will not go. But later, he does go. He says, the second son says, I will go. But later changes his mind and does not go. And Jesus' question to the religious leaders was, who did the will of his father? And their answer was, the first son. The one who first said, no, I will not go, but later did. And what's encouraging to me about that is that Sarah, though she starts with faith, God's assessment of her life is that she did the will of God. I mean, she started with unbelief. Though she started with unbelief, God's assessment of her life is that she did the will of God. Why? Because she didn't end up where she started. And so the challenge in my life is not where did I start, because where I started really isn't so important. It's where do I end up? And if at times initially the promises of God and the things he says he's going to do are too wonderful for me to embrace, and I don't embrace them, and I don't get a handle on them, and I really doubt them, and you know, if that's true about my life now, that doesn't mean that I can't move to a point where I have done the will of God. If I can just move to that point where I can consider him faithful who promised. And if I do that, then I've done the will of God. But I can believe the promise of God now. And maybe after 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years of the waves of my reality beating against my faith, I finally let that faith slip away and I lose sight of the promises of God and I lose hope in the promises of God. It doesn't matter if I believe for 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years if at the end I have not believed. Because at the end, I have not done the will of God. Because that's ultimately the measure of whether or not we've done the will of God is whether or not we have believed at the time of the promise. Whether or not we believe at the time of the fulfillment of the promise. And Hebrews' testimony to us about Sarah is that she was a woman of faith, and that by faith she received the power to conceive, because she considered him faithful who had promised. So there's just such remarkable stuff here in Sarah's life. Well, then these men, they get up and they prepare to leave, and we don't have time to go into that today. So next week, we'll talk about God's little discussion here about whether or not he'll reveal his mind to Abraham. And then we'll go on and we'll talk about Abraham's negotiations with God over this whole issue of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. Okay?